Hello and welcome to MPN Forum Live, the home to MPN patient storytelling, the only podcast specifically designed for patients and caregivers of MPNs, which include the following blood cancers: PV, ET, and myelofibrosis. From the dawn of time, human beings have shared a deep history of bonding with each other through storytelling. These stories provide MPN patients and their families with a unique experience not easily replicated on traditional social platforms. Besides patient stories, from time to time we will feature guest hosts, caregivers, hematologists, and experts who can provide insight into medical breakthroughs and the benefits of exercise and a well-balanced diet. We are funded through donations from our listeners and grants from CTI Biopharma and Insight. MPN Forum is completely independent from outside influence and is reliant on donations from our listeners. Anyone interested in making a much-appreciated donation can go out to our website, mpnforumlive.com. Please click on the donation tab and you can donate via check or PayPal. All views and comments presented on MPN Forum Live are the opinions of our guests and hosts and are not to be taken as professional medical advice. Always check with your hematologist or oncologist should you be interested in learning more about a topic discussed on MPN Forum Live. All right, today's issue of MPN Forum Live podcast, we have with us Zerny Cohen from Massive Bio, which the name itself doesn't necessarily describe the company as far as something that you might recognize if you're an MPN patient, as well as Fiona. And Fiona, I don't see your last name on here.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Evans.
Yeah, there it is. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And they're both with Massive Bio. And so, my first question is, who the heck is Massive Bio? What a name.
That's a good question. So Massive Bio is a company that connects patients to clinical trials. It was established in 2014. We have three founders, Celine Kernaz, Chatai Chugalu, and Arturo Luisa Bonilla. They met because of frustrations they were having in their own, families with someone close to them being diagnosed with cancer. And they were frustrated with the lack of information available to them and their families regarding clinical trials. So they came together and created Massive Bio's proprietary AI-powered technology, which sorts through all the available clinical trials listed on clinicaltrials.gov to provide patients a comprehensive, personalized list of available clinical trials that they are eligible for.
Okay, great. So our audience is mostly patients and caregivers that have blood cancers, primarily MPNs. When you talk about AI, because that's such a common word today, but no one knows what it means, what does that actually mean as it relates to your business?
Yeah. So the artificial intelligence portion of this company, which is, you know, the base, the core of this company, is basically taking in all of a patient's clinical data. So that's the history, what's going on in their system right now, where they are in their journey, and basically screening all of that information against clinical trials that are available right at this moment. So all of the clinical trials that are recruiting at this moment. So what the AI does is basically it tells us what clinical trials a patient is eligible for today. And so we are able to give those matches to the patient and give them that option in case that they want to participate in that for their care.
Right. So for you know, there's two different, I hate to use the word classes of patients, but someone who goes to the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Clinic or Mayo or MD Anderson or Stanford are much more informed as to what clinicals are going on. But not always. If Stanford doesn't participate in a clinical, odds are that the hematologist or the oncologist is not going to bring up a specific clinical trial that's going on unless the patient themselves makes a request for that information from their doctor. And for patients that are using a local hematologist or they don't have a major medical research center in their state or city or town, this, I believe, would allow them on their own to do their own research and using your AI and search functions would allow them to find out about them. Now, what's to stop the patient from going through and doing searching like you would with Google, you know, versus and then just going to their doctor and asking them about it versus your service? I assume they have to sign up for it. Otherwise, they can't gain access.
Go ahead, Fiona.
Okay. So our service, yes, patients do sign up for it. They can find it on Google, on any social media platforms. We also receive a lot of referrals from physicians, both in small community hospitals and facilities and in large research facilities. Because as you mentioned, you know, if that trial is not recruiting at that site, you know, the doctors are busy doing their, seeing their patients daily, doing their work. They don't have, you know, the bandwidth to go out and search independently for trials. So they come to us also. So patients come to us and we offer a concierge service. You know, our service not only provides the information to the patient and the physician, but we help the patient from start to finish, and start being when they reach out to us and the finish being when they enroll into that trial. So we facilitate, you know, getting them their appointment at the trial site and doing all of the legwork and dealing with any operational issues that come up, because sometimes issues do pop up. So our service is really meant to make sure that patients get to the trial itself. And patients can Google, you know, they can go on clinicaltrials.gov. They can Google for, you know, they can search for trials specific to their disease and input some information and possibly get some results that will benefit them. But it's, you know, it's a challenge to do that. So with our process, we're able to take that, you know, that challenge away from patients and physicians to get patients enrolled.
And I think I have two additional things to that as well. You know, Googling is a great resource right now. But another thing that we do is to actually screen you against the inclusion exclusion criteria. So the report that we give you is a report of clinical trials that you are actually already eligible for. Or if you are not, then we tell you, you know, this is the type of thing, you know, when you progress or when you're at this point, this will be the trial for you if there is nothing for you at this moment. Because that always happens as well if you haven't, you know, if you haven't progressed as much. And at the same time, it gives the patients a forum to ask questions. So our team is staffed with clinical oncology research nurses. So the the people who are actually giving it, them these reports are the nurses who can actually answer their questions based on the trials or just in their oncology journey in general.
Right. So how would a patient connect directly with Massive Bio? And then second question is, how do they get their... So let's say they come to your website and they sign up. Like, what are the next steps? And then how do they include their doctor if their doctor is not familiar with Massive Bio?
Yeah. So, they could come to our website. Again, we're available, you know, through social media and patient advocacy groups we work with. So a number of them have our information posted. But they essentially would come to us. Our call center will field calls. We have patient advocates on staff that, you know, take patient calls, help them through the process. We have a consent or HIPAA form that we ask patients to complete. It allows us to review their medical records. If patients have access to their medical records, we have a patient portal where they can upload those records. If the patients don't have access, we can request the records directly from the doctor's office. And once we receive those records, our oncology nurses take over utilizing our AI system to match patients to trials, and then the patients receive a report listing the trials that they are eligible for. It gives a description of each trial, the, you know, corresponding NCT number, and the rationale for the trials listed. And they can share that information with their doctor, or we can share the information for them with their doctor. And so, you know, we encourage patients to speak with our nurses. We help answer any questions they have, but we're happy to, you know, involve their doctor any way they wish.
Right. So if somebody doesn't want to involve their doctor, is there, which wouldn't be a good idea, but is there a safety mechanism built into the system so that a person couldn't get into a clinical that, you know, they might meet the criteria, but their doctor might otherwise say, no, I don't think you should go on that drug because of A, B, and C.
Well, I think, you know, Zerny may be able to help with the medical side of that. But, you know, in our process, in Massive Bio's process, if the patient says, you know, don't include my doctor, then we won't include that. We won't send anything to the physician. We, of course, don't recommend that either in terms of, you know, not seeking your physician's advice. But patients, you know, if they're eligible for the trial, they can participate in the trial and we can, you know, we provide their eligibility results to them. So they certainly could go ahead if they chose to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a good example of that is actually we have some patients who are maybe in some sort of transition between primary oncologists. So they're essentially in that kind of limbo where they're trying to switch to another doctor. So as long as you really have your medical records with you that you can provide to us, if you let us know that you do not want your physician involved, that is your right as a patient. You know, and that is something that we will certainly honor. If it's something that you definitely mentioned to us, that is something that we will honor. And, you know, the referrals in the United States are not physician to physician, really. So if you decide to go to a trial, to enroll in a trial that your physician may be saying that you shouldn't or that, you know, a bit hesitant to, and, you know, it is your right to be able to enroll in that as well. And we will always help you enroll in that trial.
Right. So what is the time frame from average time frame from when a person registers at your site to when there's a response back for finding out if they're in the if they got into the clinical and what needs, and then what happens after that? So I'm approved. Where do you know, what are the next steps?
So in terms of how quickly we reach out to patients, when we receive a patient, we're reaching out within 24 hours, usually a lot less than that. We will either request the records from the patient or the provider, the doctor's office. We have a dedicated medical records team that follows up with for medical record requests. And as soon as we have the medical records in hand, we say up to 7 days, but it is a lot faster than that usually for our pre-screening. And if there's a trial that, you know, the patient is interested in, so we'll provide you our report of eligible trials. The nurse will contact the patient, review the report with them, and if the patient says, yes, I'm interested in this trial, that our oncology nurses will contact that trial site to help schedule the first appointment.
Right.
So it's quite fast in terms of turnaround time. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we do help with, you know, any operational issues. So we try to make sure the trial site has what they need to get patients started right away.
Right. So how many employees do you currently have, and how are you funded?
We have probably, we've been growing exponentially. We have, I think,
to 72 now.
72. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say 70. So yeah, 72. We are global. So we have, you know, patient or employees all over. We help patients globally. And we have investors, which is how we're funded. And we also work with a few pharmaceutical companies to assist with recruiting. So, you know, we do offer our service for free to all patients.
Right. So all of the medical records then that you collect, is that data, I mean, since you mentioned HIPAA before, I assume you follow the HIPAA rules. Mm-hmm. And then what are there any things that you do with that data beyond the clinical, or is it stored when the clinic, the trial is over, or how does that work?
So we are completely HIPAA compliant. We also have a SOC 1 and 2 certification, which is, you know, security, and all of our information is secure. We never share or sell any information. Patients' medical records are stored within the guidelines and timeframes of HIPAA regulations. And we would share a patient's medical records with the trial site if and when the patient enrolls into that trial.
Right. And then how long after the trial, let's say a person gets into the trial, they go through the trial, how long do you hold that data for, long after the person's done, let's say, with the clinical?
Yeah. So once the person is enrolled into the trial, we no longer have any access to their medical records, you know, going forward. So that is out of our hands at that point. That goes through, you know, the physician and the trial site that the patient is going to. In terms of our database, we hold medical records for 7 years.
Okay. What if the patient does not like the trial options given?
That is something that I like to emphasize. There is absolutely no obligation for a patient to pick any of the clinical trials that are provided to them. So the clinical trials are, the report is very comprehensive. So we review that with you, and should you choose to, we help refer you to them. But if you say that, hey, I don't really like any of these trials, then that is something that we will honor as well. Another thing that I like to emphasize is that clinical trials start and complete all the time. So if you don't like the matches that you have right now, it doesn't mean that there won't be one in the future that you'd like for yourself. So we also offer, if you don't like any of the clinical trials, to rematch you at a later time. And we can see what the clinical trials that are recruiting is then, and see and give you the options and see if there's something that you are comfortable with.
Right. So currently in your... You know, as far this you may not have the answer to this, but how many MPN trials, because there's a lot going on right now, are you involved with, where if somebody came in, forget, you know, whether they have MF or PV or, you know, ET, approximately how many clinical trials are you involved with currently if someone were to randomly sign up?
So we actually screen you for all active and recruiting MPN clinical trials that are available within the travel distance that you provide us. So right now we actually have MF, PV, and ET clinical trials for patients who are either treatment naive or are currently under treatment or even who have failed treatment. So you will be, as long as the trial is available in recruiting, you will be screened for them.
About how many do you are there?
I don't think I have the answer to that off the top of my head.
That's okay. I'm just curious if you happen to know the number, because, you know, if there's only 5 or 10 going on, it's very different than, let's say, if you had leukemia. There could be 100 going on at the same time. But with PV and, you know, any MPN, since it's a rare disease, there's a little bit less going on than there would be with something with a larger population base.
Right. I understand. It's usually our AI that keeps track of the starting and the closures. So we have that in the database. I don't have the numbers currently at this time of how many are open.
Right. Since this is done by an AI, most of the searching, how do you know, like, if you do you run it every day? How do you know when the clinicals become available? Because I'm sure you haven't spoken with every pharmaceutical company that's doing clinicals. How are you made aware of that so that it's relevant timeline wise to the patient? Or might the patient still have to go to a government website to keep looking there as well?
Well, I just did a quick search, and there are about 320 MPN clinical trials recruiting currently.
Wow.
And that's globally. So,
right.
You know,
you're not going to go off to Turkey if you live in Detroit.
Right. Our AI system, you know, I don't know the technical term for it, but it
refreshes.
There you go. That's as good as that, as close as I could get. It refreshes its data at set times, and I believe it's at least once a week. I could be wrong about, you know, maybe it's more than that, but definitely once a week. So we're continually, you know, refreshing, taking away those ones that have stopped and up, you know, inputting the new ones that have come about.
And part of how the AI is built is actually, you know, it part of the things it relies on is actually those government websites that continually refresh that information. So if it's on that website, if it's up to date on that website, it will always be up to date with our AI as well. And that one is also refreshed, I believe, at a weekly basis in terms of recruitment timelines.
Yes. Right, but then if you have a if you have partnerships with the pharmaceutical companies, are they a separate part of the AI where they can get the information to you ahead of the update to the government site, or is it all you know, regulated by law?
I would say, you know, so I believe it's regulated in terms of if they're sharing it with us, they're sharing it, you know, with clinicaltrials.gov and the government websites. But one of the benefits for us, if we are or do have a relationship with that particular sponsor or pharmaceutical company, we can speed up the process in terms of, you know, reaching out to that site and getting that patient's first appointment scheduled. Because I don't know if you've used clinicaltrials.gov, but it can be tedious, you know, and a lot of times the information isn't accurate or it changes, you know, as we know, but it can be a challenge. So with any relationship, you know, we kind of have a way to speed things up when those things happen.
But there's also no way to, on the government, the .gov site, to put in your information and then it analyzes whether or not you qualify or, you know, could at least apply. I mean, it's all basically just raw data. And then you have to go through whoever the contact is, correct?
Right.
Correct. And I believe there are laws regarding when they need to send those updates over. It is a matter of they send it to clinicaltrials.gov and they send it to us at the same time. It's just a matter of this clinicaltrials.gov updated at the time when it's sent to them.
Sure.
And then for us, as soon as it's sent, it does go into the database on that weekly basis.
So other than any travel costs for the patient that participates in the clinical trial, are there costs for the patient for participating?
From for you? The clinical trial matching service for Massive Bio, it is completely free.
Okay.
So the clinical trial service, you sign up for it, we work with you on it, the concierge service is completely free for the patient. In terms of the clinical trial participating in it, that is a matter for the sites. For the most part, the treatment is covered by the sites. And depending on the sponsors, they cover, of course, the tests that go along with it, as well as depending on the sites, the mileage and things like that.
Okay. And then when should patients start looking for a trial?
Actually think that they should start looking for a trial at the time of diagnosis. You know, when you're diagnosed, what you really want is to have all available options in front of you. You don't want just 50 to 75% of it. You want to be able to decide on your care based on complete information, whether that's standard of care or clinical trial therapy options. So, and I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do as a company, you know, increasing that access so that we can empower you with that type of information. And it could be that, you do need to be on a standard of care, but you can already try to look for clinical trials at every step of your journey with this disease.
Yeah, the one risk I see here is that I don't know that there's if somebody is not having their doctor involved with the decision making process, the risk is, like, if you look at clinical trials, a lot of them eliminate people based on the drugs they're taking. So if you're taking drug A, you can't be in the clinical. Or there is a specific amount of time you have to be off the drug to be in on that. And I'm sure you'd most likely, you know, that is probably some of your criteria. But a patient on their own, at least most patients, wouldn't be qualified enough to truly evaluate that without, you know, treatment care. And I really think it's important that you go out of your way to encourage the patients to consult with their doctor, because their doctor, depending upon the diagnosis, is looking anywhere from 5 years to 30 years down the road. And based on, you know, there are certain stages where certain drugs will be brought in, depending upon, you know, the long-term and short-term prognosis, and depending upon, you know, where they are physically and mentally in their current state of the disease, and what the risk factors are for the patient, whether they need a transplant. And again, that's another thing that if you're in some clinicals and you take a certain drug, it makes you ineligible for other potential options that may or may not be there. And so I think having a doctor advise you, I think, is critical to the long-term success of your business, because otherwise, if the patients, and some patients are probably more capable than others, but most patients are just not going to understand. And even if your service wasn't around, going through and using a site, you know, a government site to search for clinicals, and then not checking with a doctor about where to, you know, where this fits in with their current treatment, It seems like something that would be a bigger risk than not involving your doctor.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do want to be very clear. We encourage all of our patients to get this report and show it to their oncologists. No one will know them better. You know, first and foremost, the patient will always know themselves the most. But the second one who's going to know you will be your lead oncologist, your lead physician who's been looking at your care. So 99% of our population take that report, go back to their oncologist and review the report with them. We give the option because we are very patient focused. So we always want to honor what the patient is deciding. It is their, you know, it is their body, it is their care after all. But that is something we encourage. And in fact, we do have multiple instances where the patient tells an oncology nurse, you know, I want you to speak to my doctor. And that is also something, it's a service that we also provide with the matching report. You know, if the patient cannot understand something and they need us to connect with their oncologist to potentially answer any questions to make their decision, then that is something that we do as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And to add to that, you know, when the patient comes to us, we're not simply taking the patient's word in terms of, I've had this treatment and I've had that treatment. You know, that's why we request the medical records, and we, you know, provide those medical records to the site where that oncologist is reviewing them. So the patient, you know, if they don't involve their current local oncologist, if they went to a site, they'd be seeing an oncologist. So well,
yeah, but most MPN patients are seeing hematologists, not oncologists.
Well, yeah, or hematologists. Right. Yeah.
So yeah. For the PIs who are in charge of these MPN clinical trials, they are the ones who are actually hematologists as well, who are seeing MPN patients on top of the ones that they are seeing for this particular research. So that is also something that is taking a lot of education in terms of with the patients. These are actual physicians who do see, you know, their type of cancers on a daily basis.
Yeah, right. Thank you. I was trying to, you know, put that in there. So thank you.
Yeah, that must be a huge cost to have all these other people involved on top of that in order to look at all the people that come to your site, the patients, you know, to have somebody review all the data.
Yeah, we have a rock star group of oncology nurses that, you know, are working diligently on that, in addition to, you know, speaking with patients, because like Zerny said, you know, we are patient focused. So our nurses and patient advocates are speaking with those patients, you know, throughout the process.
And everything the nurses are doing are supervised by our chief medical officer, who himself is an oncologist, and he's one of the co-founders. So everything that we're doing is supervised by clinicians who do have the experience and the background necessary to speak and to provide this education for the patients.
Yeah. I will just tell you that, in my opinion, being a patient now for 33 years, that there's a big difference between an oncologist / hematologist who sees a leukemia patient and doesn't see MPN blood cancer patients, because they just don't have. It's not that they don't have knowledge. Of course they have knowledge. It's the actual day-to-day experience of working with the uniqueness of each disease. And so, you know, because you can have a patient that has myelofibrosis and CLL. So, and as smart as your chief medical officer is, he or she can't be an expert on all of these diseases.
I completely agree with you on that. You know, there is a difference in the knowledge and in that base experience between a med onc and a hem onc. And that's with nurses as well. So they really work in tandem. Our nurses have their own specialties. For instance, my entire career has been on hematology nursing. And we have nurses whose entire careers have been on solid tumor nursing. So we do make sure that we have experts and we reach out to oncologists and hematologists that do have expertise with these cancer types, with each cancer types, to help with the development of the system, of the AI, and the just development of the patient journey.
And how are they compensated?
So
you said you're going to outside hematologists who have the experience, how are they compensated?
We have a group of physicians that we subcontract. So we pay them for, you know, their consultations. You know, if we have a question about something, you know, our nursing staff needs some clarification, we can reach out to them and, you know, speak with them and get some clarification as needed.
Okay. So it says, let's see here. What if a patient's doctor does not offer any trials?
So that, you know, is something that many people come across. You know, we have now, you know, over 40,000 patients in our database, and, you know, a large number of them come, you know, are having care in a small facility, you know, and like I said, we're all over the country. So there's some very rural places that, you know, there's no research. And so it's okay if your doctor doesn't have, you know, trials where they're located, if there's nothing close by, we will try and find you a trial in a specific area. So when we talk to patients, we ask them, you know, are you able to travel? Do you want to travel? You know, of course, we try to find something closest first. But if there's nothing super close, you know, are you able to travel at all? And based on that information, we will do our search. You know, occasionally, if this doesn't happen very often, but occasionally we have been able to open a just-in-time site for a patient. So, you know, there's a trial going on, they're eligible for it, but it's in another state and they can't travel. We could potentially open a site close to them. Again, that doesn't happen very often, but, you know, we do our best to accommodate the patients.
Right. But that would probably be up to the, I guess, the participation of the pharmaceutical company.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I remember when Jakafi from Insight came out that at first it was at one center, but then over the next several years, it expanded out to West Coast and East, you know, more locations than Texas. So
right.
So anything else? I think you guys have covered just about everything that I have on my notes. And is there anything else that you want to add that's specifically related to MPM patients or anything about the service that you feel like you would like to add to the conversation?
Well, I would like to mention our mobile app. We actually have two mobile apps. One mobile app is for cancer patients with any cancer type. But then we also have a specific MPN mobile app. It's, you know, free. Get it downloaded onto your phone from the App Store, and you put in, you know, your information, name, your diagnosis. It asks for a few questions. It asks a few questions, nothing too involved. And then it will give you a short listing of trials that, you know, could be trials that you're eligible for close to you. So it's not super involved either for the patient or the results. It basically gives you a preliminary list of trials close to you. And then if, you know, that's something that you think, you know, you wanted to look into further, you can then, you know, move forward with our actual clinical trial matching, where we, you know, review your records and match you to eligible trials.
Yeah, I think you'll find that most MPN patients are older and are more desktop based than they might have a phone, but
yeah,
it may not be an iPhone or an Android. It's you know, I was shocked to find out doing this podcast that how many patients didn't know what Zoom was, don't know how to download an app on their desktop or their phone, and are not as experienced as one would expect based on how fast the technology has moved. There are some people, obviously, that are really good, but I think you know, with younger patients, you'll have no problems getting them to use the mobile apps. But with some of the older patients, it can be a little trickier. And a lot of them don't have, you know, very fast broadband. Some of them only have 20 to 25 megs or something in their home. So the more you branch out and get into other states and areas, the more you find out about. That's been our biggest challenge with our podcast, is how many people don't know what a podcast is in the MPN community.
Yeah. And we actually have a lot of people that we reach out to that we're calling on landlines. And it's kind of, you know, they say, call me on my landline, or, you know, call me back on this. And it's their landline. And so we do understand that. And so that's, you know, we have our advocates available and they're able to reach out to patients, you know, in the easiest way possible for the patient.
Great. Anything else you want to let our audience know about?
I think my last thought is really that we just want to make sure that patients have or know all of the options that are available to them. So that is really the true goal of this company, to increase the access to that information and increase the access to the trials should they choose to. So there is no obligation. So if you want to be educated about about the available options, then you can certainly, you know, reach out to us and we would be happy to help at any point in time.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I think that your service has a lot of potential because, you know, the MPN patients are always looking for more information and knowledge, and clinicals is one of the areas that have been they're a little tougher to get in unless you know the right doctor or facility to that knows what's going on. And then other times, you know, once a major medical research center has committed to Insight, they, you know, aren't going to usually take on competing clinicals. So they might try something that's a completely different class of drugs. But so if you don't know about what's out there, it makes it harder to get the decision. And, you know, the other thing is that the doctors themselves are under a tremendous caseload.
Right.
And so they just, right, you know, they sometimes they don't even know that a clinical is going on in there until later within their own research center. So I think you guys have a lot of potential, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot of competition over time.
Yeah, I agree.
All righty. I'm going to turn off. Thank you guys for joining us.
And, thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes. Thank you for all you're doing for the MPN community.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Today's issue of MPN Forum Live podcast, we have with us Zerny Cohen from Massive Bio, which the name itself doesn't necessarily describe the company as far as something that you might recognize if you're an MPN patient, as well as Fiona. And Fiona, I don't see your last name on here.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Evans.
Yeah, there it is. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And they're both with Massive Bio. And so my first question is, who the heck is Massive Bio? What a name.
That's a good question. So Massive Bio is a company that connects patients to clinical trials. It was established in 2014. We have three founders, Celine Kernaz, Chatai Chugalu, and Arturo Luisa Bonilla. They met because of frustrations they were having in their own, families with someone close to them being diagnosed with cancer, and they were frustrated with the lack of information available to them and their families regarding clinical trials. So they came together and created Massive Bio's proprietary AI-powered technology, which sorts through all the available clinical trials listed on clinicaltrials.gov to provide patients a comprehensive, personalized list of available clinical trials that they are eligible for.
Okay, great. So our audience is mostly patients and caregivers that have blood cancers, primarily MPNs. When you talk about AI, because that's such a common word today, but no one knows what it means, what does that actually mean as it relates to your business?
Yeah. So the artificial intelligence portion of this company, which is, you know, the base, the core of this company, is basically taking in all of a patient's clinical data. So that's the history, what's going on in their system right now, where they are in their journey, and basically screening all of that information against clinical trials that are available right at this moment. So all of the clinical trials that are recruiting at this moment. So what the AI does is basically it tells us what clinical trials a patient is eligible for today. And so we are able to give those matches to the patient and give them that option in case that they want to participate in that for their care.
Right. So for, you know, there's two different, I hate to use the word classes of patients, but someone who goes to the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Clinic or Mayo or MD Anderson or Stanford are much more informed as to what clinicals are going on. But not always. If Stanford doesn't participate in a clinical, odds are that the hematologist or the oncologist is not going to bring up a specific clinical trial that's going on unless the patient themselves makes a request for that information from their doctor. And for patients that are using a local hematologist or they don't have a major medical research center in their state or city or town, this, I believe, would allow them on their own to do their own research and using your AI and search functions would allow them to find out about them. Now, what's to stop the patient from going through and doing searching like you would with Google, you know, versus, and then just going to their doctor and asking them about it, versus your service? I assume they have to sign up for it, otherwise they can't gain access.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Fiona.
Okay. So our service, yes, patients do sign up for it. They can find it on Google, on any social media platforms. We also receive a lot of referrals from physicians, both in small community hospitals and facilities and in large research facilities. Because as you mentioned, you know, if that trial is not recruiting at that site, you know, the doctors are busy seeing their patients daily, doing their work. They don't have, you know, the bandwidth to go out and search independently for trials. So they come to us also. So patients come to us and we offer a concierge service. You know, our service not only provides the information to the patient and the physician, but we help the patient from start to finish and start being when they reach out to us, and the finish being when they enroll into that trial. So we facilitate, you know, getting them their appointment at the trial site and doing all of the legwork and dealing with any operational issues that come up, because sometimes issues do pop up. So our service is really meant to make sure that patients get to the trial itself. And patients can Google, you know, they can go on clinicaltrials.gov. They can Google for, you know, they can search for trials specific to their disease and input some information and possibly get some results that will benefit them. But it's, you know, it's a challenge to do that. So with our process, we're able to take that, you know, that challenge away from patients and physicians to get patients enrolled.
And I think I have two additional things to that as well. You know, Googling is a great resource right now. But another thing that we do is to actually screen you against the inclusion exclusion criteria. So the report that we give you is a report of clinical trials that you are actually already eligible for. Or if you are not, then we tell you, you know, this is the type of thing, you know, when you progress or when you're at this point, this will be the trial for you if there is nothing for you at this moment. Because that always happens as well if you haven't, you know, if you haven't progressed as much. And at the same time, it gives the patients a forum to ask questions. So our team is staffed with clinical oncology research nurses. So the people who are actually giving them these reports are the nurses who can actually answer their questions based on the trials or just in their oncology journey in general.
Right. So how would a patient connect directly with Massive Bio? And then second question is, how do they get there? So let's say they come to your website and they sign up. Like, what are the next steps? And then how do they include their doctor if their doctor is not familiar with Massive Bio?
Yeah. So they could come to our website. Again, we're available, you know, through social media and patient advocacy groups we work with. So that a number of them have our information posted, but they essentially would come to us. Our call center will field calls. We have patient advocates on staff that, you know, take patient calls, help them through the process. We have a consent or HIPAA form that we ask patients to complete. It allows us to review their medical records. If patients have access to their medical records, we have a patient portal where they can upload those records. If the patients don't have access, we can request the records directly from the doctor's office. And once we receive those records, our oncology nurses take over utilizing our AI system to match patients two trials, and then the patients receive a report listing the trials that they are eligible for. It gives a description of each trial, the, you know, corresponding NCT number, and the rationale for the trials listed. And they can share that information with their doctor, or we can share the information for them with their doctor. And so, you know, we encourage patients to speak with our nurses. We help answer any questions they have, but we're happy to, you know, involve their doctor any way they wish.
Right. So if somebody doesn't want to involve their doctor, is there, which wouldn't be a good idea, but is there a safety mechanism built into the system so that a person couldn't get into a clinical that, you know, they might meet the criteria, but their doctor might otherwise say, no, I don't think you should go on that drug because of A, B, and C.
Well, I think you know, Zerny may be able to help with the medical side of that. But, you know, in our process, in Massive Bio's process, if the patient says, you know, don't include my doctor, then we won't include that. We won't send anything to the physician. We, of course, don't recommend that either in terms of, you know, not seeking your physician's advice. But patients, you know, if they're eligible for the trial, they can participate in the trial, and we can, you know, we provide their eligibility results to them. So they certainly could go ahead if they chose to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a good example of that is actually we have some patients who are maybe in some sort of transition between primary oncologists. So they're essentially in that kind of limbo where they're trying to switch to another doctor. So as long as you really have your medical records with you that you can provide to us, if you let us know that you do not want your physician involved, that is your right as a patient. You know, and that is something that we will certainly honor. If it's something that you definitely mentioned to us, that is something that we will honor. And, you know, the referrals in the United States are not physician to physician, really. So if you decide to go to a trial, to enroll in a trial that your physician may be saying that you shouldn't, or that, you know, a bit hesitant to, and, you know, it is your right to be able to enroll in that as well. And we will always help you enroll in that trial.
Right. So, what is the time frame from average time frame from when a person registers at your site to when there's a response back for finding out if they're in the if they got into the clinical and what needs, and then what happens after that? So I'm approved. Where do you know? What are the next steps?
So in terms of how quickly we reach out to patients, when we receive a patient, we're reaching out within 24 hours, usually a lot less than that. We will either request the records from the patient or the provider, the doctor's office. We have a dedicated medical records team that follows up with for medical record requests. And as soon as we have the medical records in hand, we say up to 7 days, but it is a lot faster than that usually for our pre-screening. And if there is a trial that, you know, the patient is interested in, so we'll provide you our report of eligible trials. The nurse will contact the patient, review the report with them. And if the patient says, yes, I'm interested in this trial, that our oncology nurses will contact that trial site to help schedule the first appointment.
Right.
So it's quite fast in terms of turnaround time. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we do help with, you know, any operational issues. So we try to make sure the trial site has what they need to get patients started right away.
Right. So how many employees do you currently have, and how are you funded?
We have probably we've been growing exponentially. We have I think
just 72 now.
72. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say 70. So yeah, 72. We are global. So we have, you know, patient or employees all over. We help patients globally. And we have investors, which is how we're funded. And we also work with a few pharmaceutical companies to assist with recruiting. So, you know, we do offer our service for free to all patients.
Right. So all of the medical records then that you collect, is that data, I mean, since you mentioned HIPAA before, I assume you follow the HIPAA rules. Mm-hmm. And then what are there any things that you do with that data beyond the clinical, or is it stored when the clinic, the trial is over, or how does that work?
So we are completely HIPAA compliant. We also have a SOC 1 and 2 certification, which is, you know, security, and all of our information is secure. We never share or sell any information. Patients' medical records are stored within the guidelines and timeframes of HIPAA regulations. And we would share a patient's medical records with the trial site if and when the patient enrolls into that trial.
Right. And then how long after the trial, let's say a person gets into the trial, they go through the trial, how long do you hold that data for, long after the person's done, let's say, with the clinical?
Yeah. So once the person is enrolled into the trial, we no longer have any access to their medical records, you know, going forward. So that is out of our hands at that point. That goes through, you know, the physician and the trial site that the patient is going to. In terms of our database, we hold medical records for 7 years.
Okay. What if the patient does not like the trial options given?
That is something that I like to emphasize. There is absolutely no obligation for a patient to pick any of the clinical trials that are provided to them. So the clinical trials are, the report is very comprehensive. So we review that with you, and should you choose to, we help refer you to them. But if you say that, hey, I don't really like any of these trials, then that is something that we will honor as well. Another thing that I like to emphasize is that clinical trials start and complete all the time. So if you don't like the matches that you have right now, it doesn't mean that there won't be one in the future that you'd like for yourself. So we also offer, if you don't like any of the clinical trials, to rematch you at a later time. And we can see what the clinical trials that are recruiting is then, and see and give you the options and see if there's something that you are comfortable with.
Right. So currently in your, you know, as far this, you may not have the answer to this, but how many MPN trials, because there's a lot going on right now, are you involved with, where if somebody came in, forget, you know, whether they have MF or PV or, you know, ET, approximately how many clinical trials are you involved with currently if someone were to randomly sign up?
So we actually screen you for all active and recruiting MPN clinical trials that are available within the travel distance that you provide us. So right now we actually have MF, PV, and ET clinical trials for patients who are either treatment naive or are currently under treatment, or even who have failed treatment. So you will be, as long as the trial is available in recruiting, you will be screened for them.
About how many do you think are there?
I don't think I have the answer to that off the top of my head.
That's okay. I'm just curious if you happen to know the number, because, you know, if there's only 5 or 10 going on, it's very different than, let's say, if you had leukemia. There could be 100 going on at the same time. But with PV and, you know, any MPN, since it's a rare disease, there's a little bit less going on than there would be with something with a larger population base.
Right, right. I understand. It's usually our AI that keeps track of the starting and the closures. So we have that in the database. I don't have the numbers currently at this time of how many are open.
Right. Since this is done by an AI, most of the searching, how do you know, like, if you do you run it every day? How do you know when the clinicals become available? Because I'm sure you haven't spoken with every pharmaceutical company that's doing clinicals. How are you made aware of that so that it's relevant timeline-wise to the patient? Or might the patient still have to go to a government website to keep looking there as well?
Well, I just did a quick search, and there are about 320 MPN clinical trials recruiting currently.
Wow.
And that's globally. So,
right.
You know,
you're not going to go off to Turkey if you live in Detroit.
Right. Our AI system, you know, I don't know the technical term for it, but it
refreshes.
There you go. That's as good as close as I could get. It refreshes its data at set times, and I believe it's at least once a week. I could be wrong about, you know, maybe it's more than that, but definitely once a week. So we're continually, you know, refreshing, taking away those ones that have stopped and up, you know, inputting the new ones that have come about.
And part of how the AI is built is actually, you know, it part of the things it relies on is actually those government websites that continually refresh that information. So if it's on that website, if it's up to date on that website, it will always be up to date with our AI as well. And that one is also refreshed, I believe, at a weekly basis in terms of recruitment timelines.
Yes. All right. But then if you have if you have partnerships with the pharmaceutical companies, are they a separate part of the AI where they can get the information to you ahead of the update to the government site, or is it all regulated by law?
I would say, you know, I believe it's regulated in terms of if they're sharing it with us, they're sharing it, you know, with clinicaltrials.gov and the government websites. But one of the benefits for us, if we are or do have a relationship with that particular sponsor or pharmaceutical company, we can speed up the process in terms of, you know, reaching out to that site and getting that patient's first appointment scheduled. Because I don't know if you've used clinicaltrials.gov, but it can be tedious, you know, and a lot of times the information isn't accurate or it changes, you know, as we know, but it can be a challenge. So with any relationship, you know, we kind of have a way to speed things up when those things happen.
But there's also no way to, on the government, the .gov site, to put in your information and then it analyzes whether or not you qualify or, could at least apply. I mean, it's all basically just raw data. And then you have to go through whoever the contact is, correct?
Right.
Correct. And I believe there are laws regarding when they need to send those updates over. It is a matter of they send it to clinicaltrials.gov and they send it to us at the same time. It's just a matter of this clinicaltrials.gov updated at the time when it's sent to them.
Sure.
And then for us, as soon as it's sent, it does go into the database on that weekly basis.
So other than any travel costs for the patient that participates in the clinical trial. Are there costs for the patient for participating?
The clinical trial matching service for Massive Bio, it is completely free.
Okay.
So the clinical trial service, you sign up for it, we work with you on it, the concierge service is completely free for the patient. In terms of the clinical trial participating in it, that is a matter for the sites. For the most part, the treatment is covered by the sites, and depending on the sponsors, they cover, of course, the tests that go along with it, as well as depending on the sites, the mileage and things like that.
Okay. And then when should patients start looking for a trial?
I actually think that they should start looking for a trial at the time of diagnosis. You know, when you're diagnosed, what you really want is to have all available options in front of you. You don't want just 50 to 75% of it. You want to be able to decide on your care based on complete information, whether that's standard of care or clinical trial therapy options. So, and I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do as a company, you know, increasing that access so that we can empower you with that type of information. And it could be that you do need to be on a standard of care, but you can already try to look for clinical trials at every step of your journey with this disease.
Yeah, the one risk I see here is that I don't know that there's if somebody is not having their doctor involved with the decision making process, the risk is. Like if you look at clinical trials, a lot of them eliminate people based on the drugs they're taking. So if you're taking drug A, you can't be in the clinical. Or there is a specific amount of time you have to be off the drug to be in on that. And I'm sure you'd most likely, you know, that is probably some of your criteria. But a patient on their own, at least most patients, wouldn't be qualified enough to truly evaluate that without, you know, treatment care. And I really think it's important that you go out of your way to encourage the patients to consult with their doctor, because their doctor, depending upon the diagnosis, is looking anywhere from 5 years to 30 years down the road. And based on, you know, there are certain stages where certain drugs will be brought in, depending upon, you know, the long-term and short-term prognosis, and depending upon, you know, where they are physically and mentally in their current state of the disease, and what the risk factors are for the patient, whether they need a transplant. And again, that's another thing that if you're in some clinicals and you take a certain drug, it makes you ineligible for other potential options that may or may not be there. And so I think having a doctor advise you, I think, is critical to the long-term success of your business, because otherwise, if the patients, and some patients are probably more capable than others, but most patients are just not going to understand. And even if your service wasn't around, going through and using a site, you know, a government site to search for clinicals, and then not checking with a doctor about where to, you know, where this fits in with their current treatment, It seems like something that would be a bigger risk than not involving your doctor.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do want to be very clear. We encourage all of our patients to get this report and show it to their oncologists. No one will know them better. You know, first and foremost, the patient will always know themselves the most, but the second one who's going to know you will be your lead oncologist, your lead physician who's been looking at your care. So 99% of our population take that report, go back to their oncologist and review the report with them. We give the option because we are very patient focused. So we always want to honor what the patient is deciding. It is their, you know, it is their body, it is their care after all. But that is something we encourage. And in fact, we do have multiple instances where the patient tells an oncologist nurse, you know, I want you to speak to my doctor. And that is also something, it's a service that we also provide with a matching report. You know, if the patient cannot understand something and they need us to connect with their oncologist to potentially answer any questions to make their decision, then that is something that we do as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And to add to that, you know, when the patient comes to us, we're not simply taking the patient's word in terms of I've had this treatment and I've had that treatment. You know, that's why we request the medical records and we, you know, provide those medical records to the site where that oncologist is reviewing them. So the patient, you know, if they don't involve their current local oncologist, if they went to a site, they'd be seeing an oncologist.
But most MPN patients are seeing hematologists, not oncologists.
Well, yeah, or hematologists. Right.
For the PIs who are in charge of these MPN. MPN clinical trials, they are the ones who are actually hematologists as well, who are seeing MPN patients on top of the ones that they are seeing for this particular research. So that is also something that is taking a lot of education in terms of with the patients. These are actual physicians who do see, you know, their type of cancers on a daily basis.
Yeah, right. Thank you. I was trying to, you know, put that in there. So thank you.
Yeah, that must be a huge cost to have all these other people involved on top of that in order to look at all the people that come to your site, the patients, you know, to have somebody review all the data.
Yeah, we have a rock star group of oncology nurses that, you know, are working diligently on that in addition to, you know, speaking with patients because like Zerny said, you know, we are patient focused. So our nurses and patient advocates are speaking with those patients, you know, throughout the process.
And everything the nurses are doing are supervised by our chief medical officer, who himself is an oncologist, and he's one of the co-founders. So everything that we're doing is supervised by clinicians who do have the experience and the background necessary to speak and to provide this education for the patients.
Yeah. I will just tell you that, in my opinion, being a patient now for 33 years, that there's a big difference between an oncologist / hematologist who sees a leukemia patient and doesn't see MPN blood cancer patients because they just don't have. It's not that they don't have knowledge. Of course, they have knowledge. It's the actual day-to-day experience of working with the uniqueness of each disease. And so, you know, because you can have a patient that has myelofibrosis and CLL. So, and as smart as your chief medical officer is, he or she can't be an expert on all of these diseases.
I I completely agree with you on that. You know, there is a difference in the knowledge and that base experience between a med onc and a heme onc. And that's with nurses as well. So they really work in tandem. Our nurses have their own specialties. For instance, my entire career has been on hematology nursing. And we have nurses whose entire careers have been on solid tumor nursing. So we do make sure that we have experts and we reach out to oncologists and hematologists that do have expertise with these cancer types, with each cancer types, to help with the development of the system, of the AI, and the just development of the patient journey.
And how are they compensated?
So
you said you're going to outside hematologists who have the experience, how are they compensated?
We have a group of physicians that we subcontract. So we pay them for, you know, their consultations. You know, if we have a question about something, you know, our nursing staff needs some clarification, we can reach out to them and, you know, speak with them and get some clarification as needed.
Okay. So it says, let's see here. What if a patient's doctor does not offer any trials?
So that, you know, is something that many people come across. You know, we have now, you know, over 40,000 patients in our database, and you know, a large number of them come, you know, are having care in a small facility, you know, and like I said, we're all over the country. So there's some very rural places that, you know, there's no research. And so it's okay if your doctor doesn't have, you know, trials where they're located, if there's nothing close by, we will try and find you a trial in a specific area. So when we talk to patients, we ask them, you know, are you able to travel? Do you want to travel? You know, of course, we try to find something closest first. But if there's nothing super close, you know, are you able to travel at all? And based on that information, we will do our search. You know, occasionally, if this doesn't happen very often, but occasionally, we have been able to open a just-in-time site for a patient. So, you know, there's a trial going on, they're eligible for it, but it's in another state and they can't travel. We could potentially open a site close to them. Again, that doesn't happen very often, but, you know, we do our best to accommodate the patients.
Right. But that would probably be up to the, I guess, the participation of the pharmaceutical company.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah, I remember when Jakafi from Insight came out, that at first it was at one center, but then over the next several years, it expanded out to West Coast and East, you know, more locations than Texas. So
Right.
So anything else? I think you guys have covered just about everything that I have on my notes. And is there anything else that you want to add that's specifically related to MPM patients or anything about the service that you feel like you would like to add to the conversation?
Well, I would like to mention our mobile app. We actually have two mobile apps. One mobile app is for cancer patients with any cancer type. But then we also have a specific MPN mobile app. It's, you know, free. Get it downloaded onto your phone from the App Store. And you put in, you know, your information, name, your diagnosis. It asks for a few questions. It asks a few questions, nothing too involved. And then it will give you a short listing of trials that, you know, could be trials that you're eligible for close to you. So, it's not super, involved either for the patient or the results. It basically gives you a preliminary list of trials close to you. And then if, you know, that's something that you think, you know, you wanted to look into further, you can then, you know, move forward with our, actual clinical trial matching, where we, you know, review your records and match you to eligible trials.
Yeah, I think you'll find that most MPN patients are older and are more desktop based than they might have a phone, but yeah, it may not be an iPhone or an Android. It's you know, I was shocked to find out doing this podcast that how many patients didn't know what Zoom was, don't know how to download an app on their desktop or their phone, and are not as experienced as one would expect based on how fast the technology has moved. There are some people, obviously, that are really good, but I think you know, with younger patients, you'll have no problems getting them to use the mobile apps. But with some of the older patients, it can be a little trickier. And a lot of them don't have, you know, very fast broadband. Some of them only have 20 to 25 megs or something in their home. So yeah, the more you branch out and get into other states and areas, the more you find out about. That's been our biggest challenge with our podcast, is how many people don't know what a podcast is in the MPN community.
Yeah, and we actually have a lot of people that we reach out to that we're calling on landlines, and it's kind of, you know, they say call me on my landline, or you know, call me back on this, and it's their landline. And so we do understand that. And so that's, you know, we have our advocates available, and they're able to reach out to patients, you know, in the easiest way possible for the patient.
Great. Anything else you want to let our audience know about?
I think my last thought is really that we just want to make sure that patients have or know all of the options that are available to them. So that is really the true goal of this company, to increase the access to that information and increase the access to the trials should they choose to. So there is no obligation. So if you want to be educated about about the available options, then you can certainly, you know, reach out to us, and we would be happy to help at any point in time.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I think that your service has a lot of potential because, you know, the MPN patients are always looking for more information and knowledge, and clinicals is one of the areas that have been, they're a little tougher to get in unless you know the right doctor or facility to that knows what's going on. And then other times, you know, once a major medical research center has committed to Insight, they, you know, aren't going to usually take on competing clinicals. So they might try something that's a completely different class of drugs. But so if you don't know about what's out there, it makes it harder to get the decision. And, you know, the other thing is that the doctors themselves are under a tremendous caseload.
Right.
And so they just, right, you know, sometimes they don't even know that a clinical is going on in there until later within their own research center. So I think you guys have a lot of potential, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot of competition over time.
Yeah, I agree.
All righty, I'm going to turn off. Thank you guys for joining us.
And, thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes. Thank you for all you're doing for the MPN community.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.